When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No. No, man. No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tomorrow Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures up 21. ASA Futures up 117. This is following an update on Friday. Even though McDonald's earnings suckoed this morning, the same store sales shrank 1%. First time they've fallen since the fourth quarter of 2020. And, Greg, they're valuing on their... how come... Well, I don't know. It's easy to criticize because I don't know if anybody can really get a handle on it, actually. When you go to McDonald's, they get so many different prices, so many different columns. What they're saying is they're leaning on value meals to bring people back. Why can't somebody actually say what the prices are up on their... There's got to be like five items there that never change. How come you can never get a regular idea of how much their inflation is up, how the prices are up or down? I mean, why is it
if you do, they're more real estate than they are food. So,
but the thing that the report deals with is the food. So why is it impossible for somebody who clocks McDonald's and an analyst who goes after McDonald's, or that's one of their people in their chain? How does that person, like our friend Russell, who eats the same thing every morning when he goes there, how do you not keep track of Big Mac, quarter pounder, fries, you know, something else, Coke and a cup of coffee every month if that's what you're doing? I mean, how is that stuff unavailable to the public like us? If you and I were being the cub reporter there, we would keep track of that, wouldn't we?
Maybe you'd try. But
that's why you have to pick the five staples. Because the other stuff, the fact that it used to be the dollar menu, it's now, even though it says a dollar, it's $1.90 or $1.99. Or the coffee that used to be a buck, that's now whatever, $2.50. I mean, yeah, I don't know how you can... Well, coffee you probably can have. You need five or six staples. Just saying, if you're going to do this right. But then they want to do it right, is the question. In other words, I guess what I'm saying is if your same store sales are down 1%, and your prices are 6% up across the board, it's not so hot, is it?
For how long?
I'm talking about since last year.
Since last year, yeah. I mean, they would hope it's an anomaly, but I would imagine that they would be eager to squeeze the franchisees for those increases.
Well, we're on two different pages here. I'm talking about what does it say about the state of the economy. Obviously, the in terms of valuing the stuff, the real estate is important. How much the franchisee gets versus the company is important. But in terms of what most people are looking at McDonald's, the sign of the economy, you're looking at what the consumers are doing in the place. Right?
That I guess for the food revenue.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, their fees, I think, are what, six or so percent off the top?
Well, we would hope that there's a direct correlation between how well the stores are doing, how well the company's doing, at least on a quarterly basis.
The long haul, that's true. In the short term, who knows?
Well, I mean, you're not going to change your lease over the quarter.
Hopefully not, no.
Right, so I'm saying McDonald's is unchanged almost. So actually, it's up $1.75 because the rest of the market is up. And
I think they're in the same spot as they were a year ago.
First time since 2020, they've same store sales have shrank. Yeah. Not going to be in the same spot.
Yeah, but in 2020, they were trading $200, and now they're trading $250. So.
Okay. I'm saying the last time it went down was when COVID started.
Yeah, even if it goes down another, I don't know, $50.
I'm talking about the same store sales.
I'm talking about the stock price.
Well, stock price is a fictional thing because of the Fed.
Everything's a fictional thing because of the Fed.
Yeah. Well, until actually, when Jacob's on, I have a listen to a couple people on CNBC on Friday, which I normally would think were not too bright, but I'm not so sure they're not right. We'll save that and then. On Saturday night, went down south and southwest, and we went and had our usual, but one of the places we go with one of Audrey's friends and had a nice pizza, and we went back to her place, and a young couple from next door came over, has a baby, and the lady's pregnant with another one. But I just did my Stocks and Jacks Cub reporting, where I just kind of listened back and see what their life was all about, and it's. It's really amazing how the world that they're in, we're in, to them is very normal, in the sense that she's a very very. I never can fail. I don't exactly know what the guy does, but he works, and he's a
importer exporter.
No, he's he's just a regular guy that works, and he's very handy. Fixed his place up, bought it from this older guy. And next door to where Audrey's friend lived, and the place looks terrific. This great little kid, and a wife is pregnant again, and she's something in the medical community, but bright as all get out, real real nice. And their history was that they bought this house, and when they got married, they're not the type to go out and blow all their dough, so they must have had some money to put down. They bought a house, I think they said in Champaign. She might have been a nurse down there or something. And anyway, they bought this thing, I'm going to say, 3.5 years ago or so. And they were talking about what a good buy and how they...
Interest rate.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure they did. And they I'm sure the guy fixed it up because he's real handy. And they did all things right. There's no criticism here whatsoever. Matter of fact, it's just the opposite. They did the place, and when they sold it, they made, whatever. I think they paid $160 and sold it for like $230 or something. In like a 3-year period. So, some of that I'm sure is his sweat equity in fixing the place up, and they put some money in it. But they're absolutely convinced, not convinced, but just by listening to them, their idea that this is normal now, and that they made this money. And it has nothing to do with the fact that, by the way, the $230 you now got instead of the $180 you bought it for is probably worth the same as the $180 was you bought it for. The only problem is people who had just had their money in cash didn't get that push. I mean, it's the incredible change in lifestyle of people who own something, like a house or stocks, versus people who didn't. And people just put their money in the bank or just used it for business or whatever.
If they rolled it into a new house, they didn't have to pay taxes on it, right?
Right. And if you keep doing that, I mean, you never really do. Because once you're over, if you sell it, when you're over 65 or something, I don't know the tax law, I used to know, but you never have to pay, do you? I don't think so. I think you get a one-time...
If you There's a cap on it. I don't think it's if you, the first like $500,000 or something.
Something like that. I mean, it keeps changing, but
yeah, I think it's more than what a house, the average house is.
Yeah, it's up there. Well, you can Google it after when Jan comes on. You know, house income tax, primary resident income tax exemption, or something, because I know it's there type of thing. But idle, not so much fun on Saturdays. My weekend starts out, and you know, Greg, when you don't take this wrong, but when you get old, anything that changes a little bit, you just get this weird feeling immediately that something's wrong. Well, I have this gentleman.
It's like a Spider-Man, Spidey sense.
It's something. I don't know what it is. I have a guy in a neighborhood that, you know, takes care of the snow, and he comes by every week and sweeps the back out, and if we're doing a construction, he does some of the garbage. Anyway, everybody knows the guy. He's been around forever. And we've actually become pretty good friends. The guy's got a key to the back door, you know. A couple of his buddies, and when we've had issues, we're in an apartment. Maybe somebody left a whole bunch of crap in an apartment. He and a couple of his friends come over and they clean it. Anyway, he's a good guy, but he's got issues, you know. He sells Streetwise type of thing. But so all of a sudden, whenever he comes over on Monday morning or Saturday morning to get his $20, when he rings the doorbell, he rings it like 10 times to aggravate the hell out of you, right? So Saturday morning, I got other guys upstairs working on decks and kind of busy. All of a sudden, the doorbell rings once. And we go, okay, well, who the hell is that? Or why is Nate only ringing the thing one time? What's wrong with him? I immediately know something's wrong. I open the door, and there he is, totally doubled over, almost on the ground, foaming from the mouth. And he's a bad diabetic. I'm thinking, it's got to be something to do with his diabetes. Plus, he probably caught some. One of his buddies must have given him some drug that's no good. And I'm like, now what do I do with him? And his buddy shows up out front. And I said, what are we doing? He goes, it's probably his diabetes. I'll walk him like just a little bit to the 7-Eleven. I'll get him some orange juice. And he'll be okay. Well, of course, they leave. I come around the alley. And the buddy's gone. And he's, you know, looking like he's going down on the sidewalk. So I grab these people with the nice couple come by with their dog. So we kind of keep him going, put some water on him, try and cool him down, call the ambulance, because, of course, he doesn't want me to. And he ends up being okay, I guess. It was like 90%.
That's good.
I don't know if he had any other drugs in him, so I probably was quick to accuse there, but it wouldn't be the first time.
You don't know. Whatever.
I know. I didn't myself.
Better to be cautious than not.
And I tell you what, the people from the fire department were absolutely spectacular. Came right over, you know, and... You're not supposed to tell anybody what's going on. I mean, people just call on the guy, but the guy comes out and he says, well, he says you're his buddy, so we think he's going to be fine. We'll take him over to the hospital, but we think it won't be too long. So he goes, we think it's a little bit more than the diabetes, but mostly diabetes. Well, it turned out, I guess it was all diabetes.
Yeah.
But, it's really hard for anybody. And actually, you know what, Greg? I don't want you to have a feel for it, to be honest with you, because it's a horrible feel. The younger generation in my group, you know, especially the people who are over there, are all dying off. So maybe they're better off. We're all better off just dead. But the whole Vietnam experience is just such a hole in this country that I don't think we've ever recovered from. And he and his buddies were all, he's a vet. They were all there. You know, most of them came back. Doesn't matter black or white. It was real hard for you to get back in society because people here had no sympathy because they thought you were baby killers.
Ugh.
And so I know my cousin died young. He never could quite get back in society. He was always a bouncer. He was this, he was that. And there's guys that just never, you know, you come back, not only people didn't like you, but your girlfriends are all married to other guys. You don't know anybody. All the buddies you were hanging out with in the hood, maybe you all moved their burbs. You end up with some, you know, bunch of a string of half-assed jobs, and or selling Streetwise, and you know, and it just is the recovery was just not there, and there's nothing wrong with this guy. He's as honest as the day is long, hard worker, just never was able to get back in, and there's got to be, you know, a lot of them are dying off, but there's got to be thousands of those people still left, and it's an experience that just. You know, I mean, once
you knew something was wrong from the beginning.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And anyway, but all's well that ends well. And one thing's for sure, I'm going to make sure that I go out and have orange juice and a few candy bars, always my place in case it ever happens again. I didn't have anything. I mean, I didn't have anything to give the guy.
No sugar? You're way too healthy.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, I don't, but that won't be the case anymore. I'll have some stuff. I'm going to find out. We'll go online today and find out what's the best.
Orange juice,
I think, is the best.
You know, Sprite or Coke.
Well, I was at my brother's yesterday, and my niece's boyfriend, Dan, you met him, real nice guy, and he's a paramedic, and he goes, no, orange juice is the best. He goes, even a Coke, is anything with sugar, he goes, it's the same thing. And I said, well, what's the difference between that and, like, insulin? He goes, there's no difference. One, if you give him a shot, it just acts a little quicker, but not that much quicker.
Right.
So anyway, I'll be ready. So live and learn, I guess. But all's well that ends well. So, I didn't want to see poor Nate go down. And so anyway, it's not just him. It's that whole history of that whole time. And, you know, it brings back a lot of memories of people that I knew that went over there. And I was a little young for it. Well, Nate's younger than me. So, I mean, he probably was one of the last people there. But still, somewhere in this office, if I continue to clean, there's an article where somebody did this big study. I mentioned this on the air before. This big study about actuarially people that used to use the term in country. People that were in country, not even servicemen. People who were just over there, whether you work for contractors or whatever the hell it should, maybe for a reporter. That it was like over a whole period of time. There were, you know, probably several million people that were in and out of the place doing God knows what. And however, this guy or these people that did this study got it together. Everybody has at every age. I mean, you could put a beam of light on me or you or anybody, John Flanagan or any of the listeners. There's going to be an actuary that's going to say, 62 years old, you know, halfway decent health, whatever, white male. Your life expectancy is, you know, 24 years or something. Whatever it is, whatever age, whatever it is you make it to, obviously every year you make it, your expected age goes further. But this guy thought that 300, this is 10, 12 years ago, he wrote this article, there were 300,000 people dead that shouldn't have been, actuarially, that were just in the place. They weren't, we're not even talking about service people. I think he wasn't counting service people. Maybe he was, but I think he wasn't. And the idea was somewhere between the drugs, the stress, the Agent Orange, all the other crap that they were spraying on people when they tried to deforest the place, with all that stuff together, maybe just the fact that everybody over there smoked, I don't know. He didn't anywhere near coming up with a reason. That's a hell of a lot of people, right? For God's sake.
That would be... very interesting correlation to investigate. I'm sure there's.
I don't know how you could even do it, though. I mean,
don't want to know about.
Well, I know everybody. My parents' generation. Well, almost didn't know my dad. He was age four. All those guys. If you're going to die tomorrow, the tobacco companies gave everybody free cigarettes, so they essentially got everybody hooked. And, you know, if you think you're going to die tomorrow, what's and you like taking a drag? Why wouldn't you do it, right? All those people had problems with tobacco, and you could just tell. I mean, right now when I look at somebody who's, you know, 65, 70, 75, they can look in real nice shape and look. You know, I'm an old guy.
As long as
40.
You don't smoke and drink.
Well, drinking's better than smoking. I mean, but especially women, it seems like you can tell by looking at somebody who's 60 if they're a smoker or not. But I mean, everybody from that era smoked. Because, you know, it was just the thing to do. And it started out by the tobacco companies giving people in the service free cigarettes. And by being American, right, they're going to help them out. Well, no, they didn't. They addicted them. Right? And then that's the history of some American corporations. Now, I think people maybe didn't know how dangerous it was, or maybe they did and didn't care. I don't know what it was. But
anyway. Well, they got lied to.
Yeah. But everybody, I mean, I would... There'd be a poker game at my grandmother's house, and there'd be, you know, I was young, but there'd be eight people in the room, and all eight of them were smoking. I'm going, why do you even need to light one up? All you do is breathe in. And it was, but, you know, and that group, they didn't last. Plus, they all came back and worked in places with, you know, some of the chemicals and stuff. That, you know, that group all died young. And
now we know, though.
Yeah, so well.
Now we're doing all sorts of weird stuff.
Well, yeah, now we're doing all sorts of weird stuff. All right, hey, walk me through... the change in politics, without getting into politics, we had a big shift in from Trump going to kill his doddering old guy, which is what the story was. I never accused anybody of being doddering and old because I never met the man. But let's put it this way. A seemingly clearly failing dude piles out. Now they have somebody younger with a little bit of momentum, for a while anyway.
The buzz on Twitter was from that, I think it was the Seymour Hersh something, and he was saying how Obama, the vice president, and Chuck Schumer ganged up on the president and said, if you don't drop out here, we're going to 25th Amendment you. And that was supposedly what made him step down.
Well, you know, the thing is, they were in the room with him. So, I would trust their, I guess I would trust their judgment because they're sitting there looking at the guy. They could tell whether he's going to make it 4 more years in any kind of, and I think the answer might have been clearly no. I mean, I don't want to make that judgment because I wasn't close enough proximity. I know some people.
Yeah, the guy's got a, what's it called, a Pulitzer Prize, so he's not nobody who said it, and I think, I forgot who picked up on it. Maybe it was one New Yorker or something, but he was saying that behind the scenes, well, over the weekend or whatever, that they made the call to say no more, and they got Obama involved, meaning he initiated the conversation with the vice president and the, maybe it was Pelosi too, but they were.
Well, maybe Obama's somebody that Biden really trusts. You don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But it was interesting to see that coming from a liberal journalist.
Well, I can't help but, I mean, I can't emphasize somewhat enough, and I'm not telling the listeners anything. Most of the listeners know what I'm talking about. You every one of these cases, as you see people age, and you know everybody's aging, right? I mean, it's not like what did my buddy Dr. Billy said? When are we all going to realize the day we're born is the day we start to die? Well, that's an interesting thought, but it's not that far off, you know. And I know people who look like they're fine physically. When you talk
skinny fat.
Well, no, I mean, just
supposedly dangerous.
Well, I'm saying people that look like they're fine, and there was a chairman of Board of Trade, I won't give any names, years ago, and I'm sitting there listening, I can't believe this guy has got this job. I mean, he was a boxer. I think he took too many to the head. But then again, I've
possible.
I've seen some judges that, you know, are coming to the Triple AM judge night, and they've got a walker, they can barely move around, and you know, those kinds of things, and then you sit them down, and all of a sudden, their mind is like they're 30. And yet, if you saw them walking around, you'd say, "How the hell could that guy be a judge or a president?" You sit them down, and you swear the guy could write the Constitution tomorrow. So you say, if you never actually know the correlation between the mental and the physical, you know what I'm saying?
Yikes.
Well, I mean, to a degree you do, but I'm saying you don't really. There's guys that you can barely make it into the judge's chair. Once they sit down, you'd swear the guy was, you know, whatever, Alamo were in the homeless, for God's sake. And other people, they look like they're fine. They start talking to you, and you wonder, where is this guy at? I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's we can't just watch a TV thing and say that guy's got it or doesn't necessarily. Because what is the job? But I think a lot of people now think the job is this, you know, being a clown on TV or something, or being something, you know, this is your performance. That's not the job. Job is being in the Oval Office and meeting with other people. I mean Roosevelt. Well, actually, the guy did campaign pretty aggressively and so forth, even though he had the polio. But his last term, he didn't. But now the question is, if you bring him a stack of papers to make a judgment, is he capable of doing that better than anybody else? I don't know. You would never know that. Neither would I. I mean, you know. Biden, as bad as he looks, he might read 10 times as much per day as Trump. I don't know. I mean, nobody does, unless you're there. Well, I mean, but how do you know? Well, I'm saying...
I don't know.
Well, how much does Trump... my point is, you don't really know. We both suspect that he's not doing that. But but we don't know.
Like you said before, you get a feel for them.
Yeah.
The first few.
Well, you definitely get a feel that he's not like he was 2 years ago. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. But some people go downhill so fast it's scary, and some people don't. I mean, Audrey's uncle was, the guy was, he was an older dude. Man, oh man, you wouldn't have messed with him. The guy was absolute energy all day long. And he got a little bit of something. All of a sudden, he had, you know, some kind of Alzheimer's. In 6 months, the guy couldn't recognize who you were. And you're going, wait a minute, that was like 8 months ago. The guy was fine. I mean, and other people, you know, Audrey's dad was 96. Full conversation. Guy didn't lose anything mentally. I mean, you just never know.
Yeah, that's a scary thought.
Yeah, well, I mean, getting old is a scary thought. Duh. Nobody wishes it on themselves.
The kind of not knowing part.
Yeah.
I guess if you really don't know what's going on, then it's not as bad. But if you know that you're going downhill and there's nothing you can do about it, that's scary.
Yeah, that's not so good. Yeah. It happens at all kinds of ages right now. And one of the things that's really scaring me is how many young people are going down. I mean, I say the guy in the building here is my buddy. He's an engineer in the building, and his brother-in-law died. He's in a Hispanic neighborhood. And he goes, he's talking to a priest. The priest says, I've never buried so many young people in my life. He goes, it used to be all the old people died. You knew they were in the hospital. You visit them and blah, blah, blah. And you have a funeral 2 weeks later. Because that's sort of the routine. Everybody's 80-something, 90-something. And once in a while, you get somebody younger, you know, either a car crash or something. He's now, every week, it's somebody. Somebody in their 30s, somebody in their 40s, somebody in their 20s. He goes, I've never seen anything like this. I've been a priest forever.
Yikes.
I mean, something squirrelier. When we go to break, we come back. Hopefully, John will be with us if he isn't already.
He is.
SP Futures up 25, NASDAQ Futures up 1. Hey, by the way, when we come back, you got to let us know what's going on with the commodities, which I started to talk about, as the race has somewhat changed in terms of tariff. We'll talk a little bit about Bitcoin here because, you know, Trump was talking about some national reserve of Bitcoin over the weekend. I'm like, what is that all about? But anyway, we'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, more big stocks and jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures up 25. NASDAQ futures up 132. We have McDonald's earnings that came in, worse than expected, but still they were, same store sales were down for the first time since 2020. However, the stock's actually up $1.25, so I wish I'd have done that earnings play at this strike. I'd have been a big winner. Well, at least until now. You never know where it's going to open a couple hours from now. So you can't make that mistake thinking it's going to stay right there, can you, Greg? Stuff has a tendency to move. Over in Asia, we've got the... Finally, these guys are up. We got the Nikkei up 801, 2.1%. It's a big move there, 38,468. Hang Seng up 217, 17,238. Shanghai only up 95 cents, though, 28.91, as they continue to not really always follow the Hang Seng here at all. Russell says they're pretty much two different markets. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 49.2%, FTSE up 57.7%, the CAC around down 27.4%. Maybe the both of you dudes can speculate a little bit after I'm done with this as to why the amount of traffic into Paris is way less than normal. It's everybody in the world, if you're not going to the Olympics, everybody's avoiding the place. Hotel rooms are down. Airlines traffic is down actually precipitously. Bonds down 4 basis points, 4.16. The Bund down 5 basis points, 2.34. Japan down 4 basis points, 1.02. So interest rates down pretty heavy this morning here. Oil down 42 cents, 76.74. Maybe one of you two guys can explain to me why gas was up 25 cents in the last week. The oil was down like 10%. Brent down 40 cents, 80.74. Natural gas down 4 cents, under $2, 196. I didn't think I'd see that again. RBOB down a penny, 2.44, especially with La Nina coming. Gold up 920, 23.90, trying to get back over 2,400. Can't really get there, doesn't seem. Silver up 21 cents, 28.23. Again, an amazing sell over 30 for about the 10th time. Copper down 3 cents, 409. We've got foreign exchange, the euro, 108.24, so the dollar is strengthening a little bit. Same thing with the British pound, 128.30. We've made it to 129. The yen's at 153. It was up to 162. So the yen has strengthened pretty dramatically against the dollar in the last couple of weeks. Crypto, we'll talk a little about that, up $1,500, 69,741, is so many politicians are talking about a crypto reserve fund. I can't believe we would ever do that. God, I can't believe we'd ever do that. Dow down up 654 on Friday. S&P was up 59. NASDAQ up 176. Huge day to make up for a pretty crummy week. A lot of stuff there, Greg. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sport. You see the poor guy get traded in the middle of the game yesterday?
Whoops.
Yeah.
Morning, everyone. 6:38 here in Chicago. We have 73 degrees right now and thunderstorms today with a high of 80. Phoenix is mostly cloudy, very warm, high of 108 there today. Traffic inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 17 minutes. Eden's from Lake Cook, 31 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf is 21 minutes. The Ryan from 95th is 15 minutes. And the Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 19 minutes. Cubs, they beat the Royals in KC. That was 7-3. Mariners beat the White Sox on the south side. That was 6-3. And the Olympics, we've got the medal tracker here. U.S. has 12 medals, China has 9 medals, and France has 8 medals so far. In terms of the breakdown, China has the most golds, USA has the most silvers, and bronze. So that's all I got.
You see, the French ladies are out of the gymnastics. They were all, boy, the whole country was crying on that one. They thought they were going to compete. They're not even showing up for the team competition on Tuesday. They did not make it. So there you go.
I was watching more of the swimming.
So hey, what's the deal, Jen? How are you? What's the deal on the outfits? Everybody's back to being having regular outfits. What? I mean, remember they used to have the big long things that took down the drag? You were like in a whole almost bodysuit. You can't do that anymore?
Let's see.
Yeah.
I don't think you can, but I seem to recall that.
It was more related to the material. I think you can do the bodysuit, but
you can't
even
the guys. There was nothing above
material.
Nothing on above the waist.
Yeah. The shark
way. Fashions come and go.
Well, I think it was what do you call it? It was a ruling of some kind. You can only I don't know. I think
TV ratings. So.
Well, I'm talking about the guys, not the girls.
Believe me, they'll do what they can to juice ratings. So
well, it's, Well, if you do that, you have the, if you do that, you have all the girls in bikinis. I haven't seen them going that far, you know. But
yeah, you'll have your beach volleyball and diving suits or something. I don't think that'll
work. Well, beach volleyball, you know, it's that's cool. Which is showing.
I'm
know.
Waiting for pole dancing to be an Olympic sport.
So. I could see a guy like you, you know, thinking about that. Just saying, you know. Heard some kind of wacky stuff. I don't know if you heard earlier, John, talking about the young couple. Was talking about their, you know, their house and how they made money on it and so forth. And we, you know, we talk about the on the show all the time of how impossible it is, really, to impart to the rest of the world what happens when you depreciate your currency. You think it's you, that you're the genius when you have something, you own something, and you're sort of not, even though, and yet it's the other people who don't have it, aren't owning something or whatever, aren't part of that group, don't have the same experience. But everybody who buys a stock, who bought a home 5 years ago, thinks that essentially they're the genius, right? And by the way, considering what the policy has been, they did the right thing, right? But the idea that you should make 25-30% on a house in a 3 or 4 year period, you know, some of it, I'm not disparaging, it could be the fact that when everybody else was at the bar all night, you were home fixing the place up and doing this room and that room, and maybe you built a garage. A lot of it is could be a lot of stuff in there that's very positive, right? But by and large, it's a currency situation, and yet, other than the people listening to the show, how many people even have a clue what that is?
Well, it did work for generations, Tom.
Well, no, we never did that up until, well, we did it from 68 to 82. We never did it before that.
I mean, getting into the real estate market, you know, and staying in it.
Oh, no, what I'm saying is there's two things here. One is having, you know, fixed assets over time is generally a pretty good thing, but now how fast? There's no question that things, you know, we want things to appreciate a little bit, right? A little bit. And then, you know, but I'm saying the owner of the building in any 5 year stretch should not make appreciably more than the renter, because it's economic theory, everything, if currency is not part of the issue, the price of everything will end up making it toward some percentage over a risk-free rate, depending on the risk of the investment. I don't know if you remember that from years gone by. In other words, at some point, houses, six flats or eight flats, they're going to reach a point where the person who owns it is going to get a return that's better than being in a bank, because it's riskier. So it might be, his return might be, 8% a year versus putting in the bank at 6. There's an equilibrium there. And if a renter says, well, I own a brokerage company, I own a fast food stand, I own a car wash, if I can be earlier there and make my 10% there, when everybody else, maybe I'm the only car wash in the area, maybe I make 15% my first year. So I'm way better off paying rent on my building for my living and using my cash there instead of buying the place. But now, you know, 3 car washes later into the neighborhood where that becomes competitive, well, maybe my return there is now 8.5% a year, because car wash is a little more risky than owning a place, but it's not going to stay at 15 or 20. Things tend to, are supposed to become equilibrium. But we've screwed that up by saying just the fact that you own the place, because we're pouring money into it, anybody who owns a fixed asset or a stock, we're degrading the currency. Now, in 1978, it sort of didn't matter, because your savings rate was at 10, 12, whatever inflation was, plus. So you didn't really hurt the person who had money, okay? But you did hurt the person who was just plain working. Somebody came out of school like we did. You know, what are you making versus last year versus the inflation? That person always gets hurt. But this time the savers have gotten hurt as well, which they didn't the last time. But my point is, that shouldn't happen. Over a period of 10 years, the person that owns the building, the place goes up, you know, it goes up, say, 1.5 times. Well, wait a minute. The building didn't. What you're valuing it with just went down. And I mean, I preach this every week. And then I hear these conversations, and I'm going, everybody doesn't even. So anyway, on Friday, I hear two guys come on CNBC, one in a row. And one of the dudes is talking about, no matter what, you got to get in the stock market, even if, because last week it looked lousy, then all of a sudden Friday was way up. And he goes, no matter what it is, for years now, the Fed has had your back. They still have your back. They're not going to let this market go down. Even if you have a bad week, you got to use it as a buying opportunity and get in there. And I'm sitting there going, normally that would be so damn ignorant I can't even go there. Yeah, you know what, John? The guy's right. The guy's right. Or has been for... I keep thinking at some point they're not going to be able to pull that off. And maybe we're getting to a point now where they're having second thoughts. But has the dude not been right or what?
Yeah, well, he'll be right until he's wrong.
But John, it's been 20 years.
Yeah, but it's, you know, we have so little kind of appreciation for how these patterns always come back and they always kind of play out the same way. The housing situation now, real estate, leave commercial real estate off the top of the table for the moment because it's a real mess right now.
Oh, yeah, that's the only one that's... No, everybody's ignoring that part, but go on.
But the crisis of 2006, 2008 should be still fresh enough in everybody's memory. Even if you weren't in the market, real estate market then, you certainly knew what was going on.
Yeah, we're 17 years ago.
You hear about it all the time. It's
17 years
ago. Everywhere you looked.
Yeah, Jan. It's 17 years ago. We're talking like old men. It's fresh in our mind. You think it's in anybody else's mind?
That's a short period in it, when you get to my age, Tom.
I get it. I'm there. By the way, you're older than me, but not that much.
But the thing is, we haven't. We're going at that same goal. It seems at warp speed. I mean, we're looking now at a market that is much more precarious than it was then, and nobody really has a sense of how what a short time it's been, and we haven't learned any way of avoiding it, it seems. We're right back where we were, but now in spades. I think we got a real head start on a much bigger disaster facing us. And now we're looking at cities that can't sustain their debt load. They can't hold their populations. They can't, get stuff done. They can't keep their people safe. And none of these were concerns in 2006 to 2008 any more than they had been 20 or 30 years before that. But everything now is a different kind of formula. And we don't really have any playbook for where we're going other than it's going to be a disaster at some point.
Well, I'm not arguing just to be arguing because I'm trying to draw some knowledge that I know is in there. You're actually giving my argument here. and I'm saying, okay, what if I was the smoking hot lady on CNBC interviewing John Flanning? I'd say, hey, old man, it's not going to be this week or next week, and it hasn't been for the last 20 years. You're on every month giving us this story, and I don't see it happening. I just see you getting older.
No, nobody wants to be the last one on the gravy train.
Oh, yeah.
So, but
isn't it fun to argue against yourself? Because you're giving my side of the story, but I get to tell you.
Yeah, I'm not saying I'm opposed to you, but what I'm...
I'm agreeing with you, by the way. You know I am.
I just think that we are not, We don't have any kind of, I hate to say fallback for what we're facing. We don't have any way of bouncing back so that, the next time it'll be 17 years before we're down this road again. It might be 6 years or 7 years, but we're losing traction. We're not, people aren't building wealth in enough, amounts to keep themselves comfortable or to keep themselves stable. They can't be secure in their jobs anymore. We've got all sorts of assaults on this, from AI and God knows where, that we don't have any experience with, and we're not prepared for what it's going to really mean. And I think people are going to be whistling past the graveyard about all this stuff.
Well, Jan, what you were just talking about, I actually could, you've probably done this on your own. I still have buried here some calculations I did in 2007, 2008, and some articles I wrote about how non-sustainable the whole mess was, well, part of it was an article that I got from somebody else. He did all the calculation talking about how many people in society could not afford the mean value house. It was like 85%. Now, if you added another worker in there, meaning the wife or the husband, you know, so now you have a two-worker family. And Nancy will be on later. I mean, she's going to talk about some people that are getting mortgages now. They're a two-and-a-half-worker family, where they both have full-time jobs and somebody's, you know, doing income taxes on weekends or doing something. We've got the rubber band stretched about as far as we can. It's not, life is much better in terms of what people have and clearly in medical attention, but you don't have, I mean, I don't know how many people, you know, in the 60s are making $200 a week and living on 180 and 20 bucks is going to the bank. I mean, I don't know how many couples are in that spot right now, or individuals that every, I mean, you do, because you contribute to your 401k, so it's not all that bleak, but how many people are borrowing on that for stuff? Right. Jen and I were doing the stuff on the score, which has to have been 15, 18 years ago, I was getting a client or two a week, people hearing me on the air, say, this guy sounds like he's trustworthy, because I am. They'd walk in with their 401k, and there'd be always about $1 million, $1.2 million, $900,000. They'd roll into an IRA, and we'd put them in a protective program, and everybody's happy. There was only one or two index in ETFs at the time. So, you know, we didn't have the issue with, hey, you put me in the Russell, and now the Russell's unchanged, and the other stuff's way up. I mean, you didn't have a million of them where you're almost like picking stocks. Now you're picking ETFs. But by and large, everybody was happy. We did a nice job. Everybody's friendly, but now a real lot of people's 401k is encumbered. Hey, Joe, you're supposed to have $1.2 million by now. Yeah, but my daughter was sick. You know, her kid had a problem. I had to pay the medical thing. Or, oh, by the way, I gave one of my kids a down payment on a house, or something. A lot of people's retirement is become encumbered, where it really wasn't. But now the entire wealth explosion is because of asset prices going up. Not. I mean, how many people back, Jan, in our day, if they got laid off, it wasn't the right thing. They could go help somebody paint houses on the weekends, and, you know, between that and the unemployment, not that you shouldn't have declared it, you were okay till you found your other job, you know, type of thing. Yeah, I don't see that now, do you?
No, have you heard? I mean, I just saw this in passing the other day, but the IRS has relented and allowed for drawdowns from your retirement funds up to $1,000 without penalty, and no particular reason. You know, it used to be you'd have to give some song and dance to like a mutual fund company or something if it was for.
Well, Jen, you could always borrow it. Something else. You could always borrow it. This is actually a withdrawal.
Yeah, I think it's a withdrawal, but you know, it may not be. It may require repayment at some point. My concern is,
I bet it still does, unless this is real new. Because I know a lot of people that have racked up a big credit card debt and essentially taken a borrow from their 401k. And at least they're paying themselves the interest and a lot less.
Well, but the fact that the IRS is facilitating this, I think they know that people are not putting money into savings, and that the $1,000, you know, exemption is just, you know, a slippery slope. Pretty soon that's going to double or be 10,000 forward through. And of course, this is exactly what nobody wants to see happen to the retirement funds. But the concession seems to be, look, you know, it's kind of like with the bonus army in the 30s. You need your money now, and we don't want, you know, it's your money, but, you know, there should be a penalty for taking it up before you're retired. And yet we're waiving that now because we know you're in such lousy shape financially. That to me is, it's a terrible admission, and it's only going to broaden, I think, and make people feel like this is, you know, their IRA funds or whatever, which is some kind of, you know, cash machine that you're going to take money out, and either you won't be penalized or maybe you'll get a waiver from even replenishing it at some point, too. I just see this as a bad sign of how the powers that be, you know, who would be entitled to get penalty paid for that kind of withdrawal, are saying, nope, there's a bigger problem here than, you know, are getting the penalty. And that makes me think we've got a really big problem.
Greg, do you have an idea what Jen just talking about, bonus thing of the 30s? I don't know why you would.
I don't think so.
Actually, a big sore point in American history. I mean, it's a really sore point. Somehow back in the day, and I don't know when this changed or why it even started this way, if you went in the Army, you didn't necessarily get paid when you're in there, right, John? You got the money when you got out?
Well, yeah, and this goes back to the mutinies under George Washington. You look at the compensation methods they had for people in, like, state militias, your hometown militia, even in the Civil War. The wrangles with pensions and payment of money to people, you know, service people would do afterwards, dragged on for decades and decades. And reevaluating people's medical conditions, you know, the need factor, whatever. This became an industry well into the 20th century from the Civil War. And, the whatever reason you had to join the Army, saying World War One, and you were entitled to pay as you were in World War Two. And in World War Two, you had to put some of that aside for your family in an allotment so that people back home got that cash right away. I don't think there was that kind of a system in World War One. But a lot of it was, you know, you would get a bonus for, you know, having served in addition to whatever compensation you earned, and it was payable by 1945, I think was the date on it.
Well, there was a... Somehow or another, I think the last person getting a Civil War pension just died.
Yeah, because it was yeah. You know, somebody who conceived a child very late in life.
Yeah.
Who lived very long, you know. And yeah, I mean, those are like tortured, you know, files. I mean, you can search them on Ancestry.com and other military databases and just kind of see the industry that we've created.
Greg, it was you didn't get paid kind of when you were in the Army, but when you got out, you were entitled to a bonus essentially because you survived, and also you got a pension. But if you croaked, your family, your kids got the pension, which, of course, now I don't think you do. If you're dead, you're just dead. But there was no cost of living increase on the pension either. So this lady from Ohio, I think it's Ohio or Pennsylvania, this had to be 4 or 5 years. I mean, she might still be alive, but I don't think so. I think her pension was $12 a month. She was still getting it, but it was $12. It hadn't increased since 1868 or something. So anyway, so World War One, they didn't give these guys their pension, their payout at the end of World War One. It was not supposed to happen until 1945, right, John? For some reason, I don't know why they picked that date. Well, of course, the Depression happened, and everybody goes, "Hey, we want our money now, even if it's less. We need the dough now. We don't have a job, we don't have anything." And I think it actually passed Congress, and Roosevelt, for whatever reason, I mean, given his normal liberal routine, vetoed it, right, Jen?
Well, it was under Hoover.
No, Roosevelt vetoed it. I'm positive. Roosevelt vetoed it.
The bonus army that assembled in Washington, the Douglas MacArthur and Eisenhower's...
That was under Roosevelt. That was under Roosevelt.
That was the summer of 1932. That was Hoover.
But it hung in there for how many years?
He served until March of 1933. I think it was Hoover who vetoed it. I have to double check.
Well, somebody vetoed it, and sorry to interrupt. It ended up in 1936. Congress passed a bill that they were actually going to pay these guys early because of the country's in such disarray at 1936. And Roosevelt vetoed that bill, and then they overrode his veto to pay everybody.
Yes, I think that's it. The bonus army was there camped out in Washington before Roosevelt was president.
It was like the homeless people, only right across the street from the White House.
I mean, the tents set up, they come from all over the country.
It was like 100,000 people, 50,000, it was huge amounts.
And they had a lot of military brass who were there, you know, with them. You know, complaining and asking that the bonus be delivered early. I think it was June or July of 1932, and you know, they set fire to their camps.
But they didn't get paid till 1936.
Yeah.
But eventually they did get paid. They set fire to the camp, and the two people who did it was MacArthur and Eisenhower.
Yeah. Yeah.
When Eisenhower was his puppy dog, right?
Yeah. To look at film clips of it, Tom, and to read about it just in the newspaper accounts, this is really horrifying stuff.
So. Yeah, this is American. This is money these guys were owed. When the guys are like, hey, I can't feed my family today, 1945 is a long time from now.
This is pre-unemployment compensation, pre-Social Security, pre-private pensions, pretty much. Nothing.
And everybody thought giving somebody anything was a moral hazard, right?
Yeah. Well, this is, the government dug in its heels then because they knew this was going to be, if the financial situation was precarious, before in 1932, it was pretty bad. It was only going to get worse. And they couldn't justify, at least in Hoover's mind anyway, and a lot of other people's, letting this money go out of the Treasury.
They didn't have it. They were broke.
Yeah. And would that have been a kind of stimulus package, in an earlier form that would have, it certainly would have saved some families from total, devastation financially? Would it have bankrupted the country? Well, it was already bankrupt. It really mattered anymore. They were just probably printed the money to make it happen. But the thing is, when the IRS says, now it's okay, no penalty to do this, I really have the sense that this is masking something that is far worse in its implications and a problem that's going to be impossible for people to dig their way out of. And it will never go back into the retirements. It will never be earning anything for them when they need the money upon retirement. And they're going to be taking whatever they can as early as they can and pay whatever penalty, du jour they're required to just to stay afloat. And nobody likes those kinds of options. Nobody makes smart decisions when those are the only options. To bankrupt yourself so that you can have a meal on your table tomorrow.
Well, everybody, Greg, have you ever listened to a lot of people debating the Great Depression? They'll talk about it really was two different depressions that we were coming out. The country was coming out of it in 36 and 37. Then the Fed made a bad move in 38 to tighten down on the money supply, and they drove us back into another recession. And now, if you're ever on when you're on TV, Jan and I won't be, maybe you will be one of these days, if you're ever on there, that's when you remember what we just told you. You're going to say, yeah, but, like you used to say to your mother all the time. In 1936, they did pay all these people. They sent checks out to all these people who were veterans. Because, like I said, they overrode, the Congress overrode Roosevelt's veto and sent checks out to people. And I'm guessing they must have, I don't know, Jan, I'll have to go back and look at the money supply numbers, but they must have printed them, right?
So yeah, I would think they did.
So they sent the checks out to people. So if ever, what's the term, it's price times velocity, the velocity of money. If ever there was a velocity of money, how long do you think that check made it in anybody's hand before it was spent on stuff that in terms of restocking the kitchen, getting some medicine, buying some new blankets? I'll bet that money didn't last 3 days in a normal house. So it was spent like instantly. So there was a huge shot to the economy in 1936. But a little known favorite college rule that a lot of people forget or never knew. At the same time, Greg, you've talked about gold a lot. The government decided that it was illegal for people to, quote, hoard gold in 1937.
I think that's coming again, too.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But they weren't going to tell you it was worthless. They went out and bought it from you. So in 1936, you had this money going out to people because of the World War One stuff, which was a shot in the arm for the economy. Non-sustainable, by the way. It was like your check during COVID. And all of a sudden, the next year, they went out and bought gold from everybody. So here's more money.
So they bought gold last time, and they bought meme stocks this time.
Yeah. So they bought gold. So those 2 years, if you look at the GDP, it actually looks like we were coming out of recession, when in fact it was two rounds of checks from the government on people that were starved for everything. Right, Jen?
Yep.
So the Federal Reserve had just gotten this new toy called the reserve requirement. Now, for what people, no one knows what that is. Now, what the reserve requirement is like zero, right, Greg? But the idea was if Greg made a bunch of dough and walked over to Lakeside Bank and deposited $1 million, now Lakeside can lend that money out, right? Well,
First, they're going to question me for half an hour where it came from.
Well, in those days, they didn't. They just were happy to get it. Yeah, but maybe you owned a big timber place and just made a deal for timber and somebody paid you $1 million. I mean, it could be legit. So you walk in and you put... Could be. Probably would be legit in your case, Greg. You walk in and you put the $1 million in there. Okay, so now Jan walks in and goes, I need to borrow some money. Okay, now how much of the million can they lend out? For years and years and years, the reserve requirement was 20 or 21%. So the number is, Jan needs a loan, they could loan him $800,000, which now increases the money supply, right? Because you still have $1 million demand deposit, but now it's lent out to somebody else, and he puts it back in the bank, and he's got the $800,000. So then the next person comes in and says, I need a loan. Well, you can loan that guy $640,000, and down the line you go. So the Fed had just...
Well, good thing it's zero now.
Yeah, good thing it's zero now. How's that working out? So, of course, they don't loan to anybody except the big people, so what's the difference? Well, they do want credit cards. They'll kill you on a credit card. But anyway, the Fed decides it looks like the economy's overheating. Instead of realizing it was just the government pouring money in for those two reasons, so they actually put a restriction on borrowing or lending, same thing. And they end up allegedly putting us back in a recession by contracting things again in 1938. So, I mean, all the stuff that the Fed does or the mistakes they make now, it's not like we haven't made them before, right, John? That's why these guys should be aware not to do it again.
We've got all the roadmaps we need. You know, we're trying to, like, reinvent something that, you know, we should know better than we, you know, pretend to. And I think we know how. You know, the thing about the 30s that really strikes me, Tom, when I go back and do family research, and you're right about the two depressions. Both my parents said how tough things were in 1936 and 37. That's when both of them really entered the full-time job market. You know, they weren't married yet, but they'd had jobs for a long time before that, but they were after a serious job. And my mother was hired in early 1937 as a stenographer for $12.50 a week. And that's, you know, before 40-hour weeks. That was, you know, included most of Saturday as well. And when she got a raise after 6 months to $15 a week, she thought she'd died going to heaven. But the apartment she was living in, according to the 1940s...
What was bus fare? Was what, a nickel?
No, but it was... She had L fare, and it was, you know, I think it was 10 cents each way, and she could transfer downtown to go to the west side, so she could ride it.
Yeah, that included a transfer to 10 cents.
Yeah, if you're on the L system, you couldn't go to the surface lines or the streetcars without paying another fare. It was double fare. They didn't have a unified system then. But, you know, the apartment that she was living in with her two siblings and my grandmother cost, I think, $75 a month according to the 1940 census. So, you know, somebody like my mom making, you know, $60 a month, you know, couldn't have afforded the apartment, let alone have food or anything else. So there were, like, all these places that people teamed up, multi-generation families living in apartments. The rents hadn't really, you know... You can see the wage deflation more clearly than you can any kind of reduction in rents or housing values. That wasn't as pronounced, but it took a long time for people's paychecks to get back to where they had once been.
Oh, my place to me is, it's your standard north side place, and it's too small for me. And I think there were two families that lived there.
Sure,
they were done. They put a door between the kitchen part, hang another sink and a refrigerator in there, and probably a hot plate, and they shared the bathroom.
Well, my first apartment in Rogers Park was a one-bedroom, nice, you know, small. When I rented it in 1979, the janitor said, gee, it's too bad, you know, you didn't come here last week. We just up the rent on this place from 195 to 205. So I paid 205 for my first apartment, and there was a Murphy bed in the living room, a nice bedroom. But you pulled out this, you know, gigantic door in the living room, and here was this, you know, mattress frame. It didn't have a mattress on it, but clearly this had been sleeping, you know, probably two or three people in earlier times, and probably somebody in the dining room too. But this was standard fare the way these places were designed too.
Well,
you couldn't do it on your own. You couldn't do it on just your paycheck. So
everybody had kids that worked. I mean, my uncle went to work when he was 12, for God's sake. But the second person who was on Friday, and he's a Bitcoin guy, right? And he's talking about how the way I look at Bitcoin is it's like the tulips, only you don't get a tulip. But the idea has been, the argument from the other side, if I'm discussing something with everybody, is, hey, your dollar is worth less and less by the day. This is the direction we're going. We need an alternative currency. Now, whether it should be Bitcoin or something else, I always thought the idea of an alternative currency wasn't a bad idea, but there needed to be something behind it, because your criticism of the dollar is there's not much behind it. You would think the competitor wouldn't be something with nothing behind it. But having said all that, John, you only learn from people who you disagree with, right? So the guy comes on and says, hey, look what's happened to the dollar. Look at how people are gagging on this inflation. And he said something, and he was actually, I think he was a little off, but he went back to 2000. He said something about the dollar's gone up, the amount of dollars in the system have gone up 6.5% a year for the last 20-some years. And by the way, the growth has been maybe 2%, if that. So every year, you're degrading your currency, and the stuff you have in your pocket is worth less and less. So he goes, there's been years when it was up and down. He's been, by and large, every year the thing has been draining. And Bitcoin, you can only, more about this than me, Greg, you can only make, let's say, 2% more a year or something, or 1% or whatever the number is, and there gets to be some sort of a limit. Now, do I buy that fact that, the guy came out of the mountaintop with the kung fu, beard, went back up, and nobody's messing with this Bitcoin and all this stuff? I don't buy that at all, but what he's talking about is absolutely true. I actually went through a future value table. If you look at the money supply in 2000 or 24 years ago, and you do a future value calculation, on average, it's gone up 7% a year since 2000. And I'm going to say that growth at best has been, real growth, has been 2%. If I was really in a good mood, John, I might say 2.5, but not nowhere near 7. And so someplace, somewhere, despite everybody's political machinations back and forth about this side, that side, and blah, 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 and I don't want to get into that, the fact is, through many, many presidencies and many, many Congresses, this is somebody's idea, John. And
I found the quote of the weekend for Bitcoin.
What is it? Okay.
Let's see if I...
Oh, we're going to let it grow. On day one, I will fire Gary Gensler and appoint a new SEC chairman. I didn't know he was that unpopular.
I'm going to say that 80% of the people cheering don't even know who Gary Gensler is.
No, they hate him. Here, listen to what he does.
Wow. Now. I didn't know he was that unpopular. Let me say it again. On day one, I will fire Gary Gensler.
How many people in there even know who Gary Gensler is?
Well,
let's just say they don't like him.
I don't know that his good buddy is Sam Bankman-Fried's father.
If he would have said, I'm going to fire John Flanagan, they'd have cheered.
They might have good reason to.
They've been angry at Gary Gensler since...
Why?
He was supposedly sticking up for the people who were trying to stop the GameStop run-up. And then B, they got real angry when he started trying to get rid of some Bitcoin. He started to clamp down on Bitcoin transactions or something, and taxes, and so they all hate him.
Well, this Bitcoin has no business anywhere in this. All the rules that apply to everything else don't apply there. So when you have a Bitcoin ETF, how do you give your control of your Bitcoin over to somebody else?
How do you give it? You give them the keys, or you transfer them the Bitcoin.
Okay, well, I mean, does any... So all of a sudden... So there's essentially Bitcoin in-house. Like, if you're you buy IBM through PTI, it's going to be at RBC in house, so they can,
it hasn't been agreed on.
I mean, the Bitcoin, how is it that nobody can touch the stuff if all of a sudden you can give everybody else your keys? And the thing that you talk on two sides of their head on this Bitcoin stuff. I mean, I want to get into it, but it's not all the stuff they argue about, short selling and all these other things. How does that even work in Bitcoin? How do you short Bitcoin?
Supposedly Coinbase and people custody your Bitcoin.
All right, now are there rules on that, or is whatever Coinbase feels like doing?
I don't know. There's different ways that if you have your wallet and they have the keys, if you have cold storage, it's a different way. It hasn't been written yet.
Well, that's I have a problem with that, because in 1929 the rules were kind of shady as well, and look what happened.
It's happened a couple times. Mt. Gox, what's it called?
Well, if you're going to join Prime Time, you got to have rules like Prime Time.
Right, and they don't have them.
Right. So. Well, that's a problem. But anyway, this dude was saying. So I just went through here. Does any of you know what a future value calculator is? Jan, you do. I mean, you're. So I dug around. It actually comes out to almost exactly 7% in 2000. The money supply M2 was $4.8 trillion, and now it is 24. Actually, the 7% doesn't cut it. It's more like we nudge us up a point. This is compounding. So what I'm doing is compounding the 4.8 at now 7.1% for 24 years. And what do I get to? I get to, voila, 23 trillion. It's actually 24.5. So I'm gonna guess we're actually more like 7.2 a year, maybe even 7.3 or 7.4. Jen, that's unconscionable. I mean, if we're actually cared about maintaining the integrity of the dollar. Now, my point. I mean, is this all people who have the wealthy decided that who's ever in power? This is what they want to do. Once you have assets, those people are going to do way better than people who are working for a living. I mean, somehow this is not a recent phenomenon. I mean, Trump can talk all he wants about it's a Biden phenomenon, and I guess if you were on the Democrat side, you're going to say, it's a Trump phenomenon because of COVID, which is was money supply going up on steroids, but at least there was a disease there, so you can't blame it all on the guy. But this has been relentless. Actually, it's probably 8.5% since 2008. So you got, Obama, you got Trump, and you got this guy. But it really started in 2000. It actually probably started in when we went to the war in Iraq, right? We put that on a credit card. So really, it's a Bush 2 phenomenon to a huge extent that everybody else looked at it and go, hey, this is great, like the kid in Animal House, and just kept it going. And so, how do you stop it? Who do you even blame it on, other than everybody?
Well, the whole purpose or the reason for there being a cryptocurrency industry, Tom, is because our official currency is so degraded and humiliated. I mean,
it's two reasons. One is the crackdown on paying attention to where the money goes. You can't ship dollars overseas for a drug deal like you used to be able to. So some of the reason for the Bitcoin is that, although I don't think Bitcoin's as good for that as people think it is.
Right, and if it weren't Bitcoin, it will be some other mandated digital currency. The central banks will all, I think, agree on, without consulting you or me or anybody else, about what we have to accept and trash this system that we have, because it's clearly not working, and we need to do something else, and we have just a solution. So if anything, the whole cryptocurrency thing is to be a harbinger.
Yeah, but what about our current payment system isn't working? It works fine. What doesn't work about it?
I'm not the payment
government
system,
part,
but the fact that we don't have any kind of there's no management or interest in managing where currencies are headed, how they float, what they the ability to just print money ad nauseum.
Okay, this is what when you talk about like the central banks. There's a bifurcation here, as Yogi says. There's a fork in the road. Take it. There's a difference between Federal Reserve policy in terms of how much money is in the system, and how the Federal Reserve actually operates as an operation, which I think they make progress. In my lifetime, the progress has been dramatic in terms of I mean, the fact that when you write a check or you do anything, how do you think all that stuff flows? It flows because of the Federal Reserve. I mean, the fact that when you write a check, by the way, you used to be able to get the thing in the mail a month later, that all.
But when you have a system like the one set up, then why shouldn't it work?
Well, but I'm saying, I
mean, what would prevent it from working?
Well, I'm saying the Federal Reserve does all that. And when the currency transactions between us and Europe, between us and Japan, there's zillions of those a day that regular people like us, I mean, we do some of it because we have sometimes people want to do a foreign exchange transaction. But that stuff, you know, every man sitting in the Midwest has no concept of how much money settles every day in Euro dollars or in Swiss francs or in Japanese yen. Those markets make the stock market look like a kid, right, Greg? In terms of nominal value, the Fed does all that, making sure that at 11 o'clock everything going one way clears with the stuff coming the other way. Because if it ever didn't, you'd see a blow up monetarily like you never even saw before. I mean, it's not like this. The idea that you need Bitcoin because it's online is total BS. You can do whatever you want with regular money. I mean, I'm saying the whole. I'm not to be argumentative, that the actual currency system now, except if you're in Russia when they kick you out. But what'd you say, Greg? Oh, Nancy. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with the quote system now, other than the fact that policy wise they're pouring too much in. But you got to keep those two separate, is what I'm saying, Jen.
Right, and you know, I grant you the clearinghouse function, and you need some kind of a system, and I guess, you know, this is the one we seem to have settled on, and it works okay as a clearinghouse. But the manipulation of interest rates and money supply, and I think collusion with other, you know, central banks, it takes this out of any kind of sense of national, you know, interest or anything else. It's all about serving the interests that have nothing to do with the populations of any of these countries. It's about servicing this industry. And I'm saying this only because I don't think, you know, adopting Bitcoin or any other digital currency as a standard would make any difference if you have a kind of management system like the one we have, which has way too much control over, you know, the chokehold of money supply, for one thing.
Somebody's telling these people to do this. They're not independent. The idea that you're going to blame this on Powell, or much as I can't stand her, Nancy, not Winston, what's her name?
Janet
Yellen. Yeah, they're not. Janet Yellen did not decide to do 7.4% a year money supply from 2000 on her own. Somebody saw it happen for a few years and go, this is great, let's keep it going. I just made
and
way more money.
Nobody elected or maybe even appointed.
Somebody we probably don't even know. I mean, if you're on the right,
we don't.
And on the right, you're blaming people you don't like on the left. If you're on the left, maybe you don't even know what's going on. You don't even blame the people. But who are these? And the fact that it is so coordinated. I mean, this is one thing I've never seen in my lifetime, Jan, or even anything I've ever read in. If the U.S. ever went down this road, where should it pop out? It should pop out in more dollars entering the system vis-a-vis the pound, the euro dollar, the yen, the Swiss franc. So being that market is very efficient. What should happen is every day the dollar should drop, right? Because more dollars are entering the system. They're not worth as much as the other stuff. If all of a sudden there's 10% more dollars in the system, and a year from now, and there's 1% more Swiss francs, all else being equal, guess what? The value of the dollar versus the Swiss franc just went down 9%, right?
Yep.
I mean, this is not all that intuitively obvious to people who've never had these kinds of, you know, ever studied it, but that's what happens. Well, but this time with the COVID, everybody acted in concert, except maybe the Swiss, because theirs is higher now, right? But everybody else acted in concert. And when we dropped our interest rates, so did Europe, so did Japan. Well, Japan was already down there. So did Britain, right? So it's all been together. Now, who exactly is capable of getting this kind of coordination between all these countries? I don't know if Biden is. I don't know if Trump is. I don't know if Bush was. Somebody is. Who the hell is the somebody?
Well, chances are they're not, you know, U.S. citizens.
Well, maybe they used to be.
maybe they're, you know, maybe they faked their death and they're living on some island somewhere.
Maybe it's what's her name? It was who was God? What was her character in the band flick? Octopussy. What was her name? It was who was it? The older
Pussy Galore.
No. I mean, this is the one with Roger Moore. God, who the band girl who was a little older, but very, very, real attractive. She's the only one who was in two movies. Tell us her name. Oh God, I'm drawing a huge blank here. No, Octopussy was Honor Blackman. I remember that one.
Yeah, and that was with the other. That was with Sean Connery. So this is, yeah, Roger Moore.
Yeah, it was in where they had they were doing the eggs, the Russian eggs. People were collecting.
Oh, that's my favorite one.
Yeah. What the hell is her name? Anyway, well, Maude Adams.
I don't know.
Maude Adams. Remember her?
Yes, that's the first Bond movie I ever saw.
Yeah, well, she, as I've matured, she might be my favorite Bond girl, where originally it was either Ursula Andress or, who was the lady in From Russia with Love? Daniela Bianchi. God, she's smoking hot. Not that I remember. Anyway, there weren't any really ugly Bond girls, were there? You know who was the one who got flung out the window and landed in the pool was... Natalie Wood's sister, remember? What was her name? Good and Plenty or something? Or no, Plenty O'Toole? What was her name? Plenty O'Toole. God, where did they get the name?
Trip down memory lane.
Oh, God. So, you know, we're talking about how the Nancy, you piled in on what we're doing with the currency. And you missed us Saturday night. We went over to Cass and the couple from next door. We're talking about how making money on their house so they could afford the next one. It's exactly what we've been talking about with people trading dollars. You know, they made 60 grand into one house, so they're able to pay 70 or 80 grand more for the new house, and how they're just walking the chain up, and how it almost became like a cash transaction with the mortgage almost the same price, the same as the other, because they were able to put the bigger down payment down and got themselves kind of the same place. Delightful couple. I mean, really nice people. And I'm sitting there going, God, this conversation is a trip down economic memory lane here. It's exactly what we talk about all the time. Like, this is somebody just talking about how it affects their lives and how it actually has been somewhat of a positive for them. Cause I won't say it's a positive. It's not affecting them. I mean, if they'd have bought the other place at 150, sold it at 160 because the work the guy did it, and the next place was 170, they'd be in the same place, right?
Correct.
But now they bought it for 150. The guy did some work on it. They sold it for 220. Now we're able to buy a place for 290 or something. So that you become kind of this cash buyer, which is what you and Audrey are always talking about. It's a whole different world of people that have something to sell to buy versus people starting out.
Well, wait a minute. Now, are you saying they're going to sell again?
No, not at all. They're happy.
They're in the higher one. Okay.
No, they just got in there. These are the people next door to where Kathy lives.
Right, but in your example, I thought you were saying they went 150 to 220. Now they bought close to 300, and now they fixed that up.
Well, now they're happy. Yeah. No. They're happy. They're there. I think they're here forever. They love it.
Okay. Got it.
But the money in the middle, where if you just rented and went to work like a regular stiff, not that people that bought houses are, you don't have any of that. You're just now paying 290 out of the gate.
Right.
And that's what you and Audrey are seeing. We're seeing one area where people have the inflationary bonus to work with and other people don't. Which is what you...
Right, and I'm sure this man bought low, okay, and fixed it up.
Yeah.
And then left himself. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I'm saying he did all the right things.
He did all the things that today are making a difference for him,
yes,
for people.
Yes.
If you hire that out, you probably, it didn't make the profit you were looking for.
Right.
Because you paid it out in dollars.
Well, I mean, I don't think the dude didn't, you know, he didn't pull down walls and put in new beams. He's talking about painting it and all that other kind of stuff. It's stuff that, you know, people used to know how to do. But
used to.
Yeah.
Don't anymore.
Right, don't anymore. So, yeah, what do you think about the other stuff that Jan and I have been talking about? You were listening, I know. Jan was just finishing the thought about, you know, it is hard, Jan, to separate. Everybody thinks that what the Federal Reserve does is you know, the policy. But I remember the story I was telling you guys, my buddy Robert, he's a Federal Reserve dude, and it used to be that when all the dollars went overseas, they cleared in the banks over there at like 11 o'clock, and the stuff coming this way cleared an hour later. And so Robert says, when he first got to the Fed, he's like, what could go wrong here, right? And sure enough, one day, Jan, you met him. He was telling us a story. He said, sure enough, one day some little bank in Germany went out between 11 and 12 and screwed the whole thing up, because even a small bank might have how many millions of dollars or euros back and forth in currency transactions every day, right, Jan?
Yep.
I mean, you know, this just happens. I mean, you know, my stepfather was he was vice president of finance and actually a part owner of a Waltham watch and Hallmark rings. Are they still around anymore? Hallmark rings probably is, but somebody probably bought them. And they would buy all their Swiss, the watch movements from Switzerland. And then they were assembled. You know this kind of low, kind of weird-looking building over on, it's either Desplaines or one of those streets over there, Jan, just about maybe 300 south, 300 or 400 south Desplaines or one of those canals. And it wasn't Clinton. I think it was on Clinton. That was their
over near Union Station.
Yeah, that was their manufacturing place. Where you'd get, you know, we're not talking about, you know, blast furnace or anything. They'd get all the movements from Switzerland and they would assemble them into the watch casings here. And you know, it was a few big rooms and people sitting there, and that's how you would assemble a watch. And they would have to buy the movements from Switzerland, and so they would have to have, you know, they had to go get the Swiss francs every month or every quarter when they made the delivery. And sometimes they'd have to go buy forward, but this is a small little firm, and they were doing, you know, $1 million a quarter at least. Versus, and you know, how many firms like that are out there? They're buying the movements from over there, and they had to buy Swiss francs because the people there wanted to one of the times there was this run on the dollar. This is back in the late 70s. There was this run on the dollar, and they're talking about how the dollar's going down and. Now, people, to make it worse, are saying, okay, I know the dollar is going down. I owe these people Swiss francs. Where are we? In July. I know Swiss francs in September. I'm going to lock in my price by buying Swiss francs forward. Before then, you couldn't do it on the exchange floor. So they would just go to the bank, and I want to buy the Swiss francs forward. So you would buy the francs today, and you pay the difference in the interest rate. So that only makes it all worse, right? Because if everybody goes out and starts buying more Swiss francs, meaning selling dollars today, you end up, you essentially make the whole thing worse. And of course, TV was all over these guys who were speculators, were driving a dollar down, speculators. So I'm driving home one night. He's telling me, yeah, we just went and bought some forward francs today. And I go, oh, so you're one of those dirty speculators. And he goes, well, yeah, I am. I'm like, anyway, anyways, let's go to Brit. But it's, I guess he was. He was saying, okay, I think the dollar don't look so hot. So I want my Swiss francs today. Well, guess what? He's a speculator. S&P futures down 30, up 31, sorry. NASDAQ futures up 174. We could have 2 days of rally here. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Low and OPEC Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures up 32. NASDAQ futures up 172. This is even with McDonald's, which is now up almost $3, up 285, even though they missed on same-store sales, declined for the first time since the beginning of COVID. We just had Greg's favorite stock, Heineken, report a big loss, right, Greg? So they're down 8%. We're not eating McDonald's and we're not drinking beer. Tell me how healthy things are. Just saying. I can't go down this road. Dow up 162. Individual stocks in the Dow. We've got the Goldman Sachs up 231. We've got Microsoft up 540. Microsoft took a little bit of beating last week, but now it's coming back. And healthcare up 428. Salesforce up 220. So just about everything in the Dow is green this morning. Over in Asia, big bounce back over here. They had a rough week last week, but Nikkei up 801. That's 2%, 38,468. And I think my fellow trading companion here, Greg, will say, this kind of movement, these 1% and 2% moves on a daily basis, even if it's the upside, generally is not considered all that healthy. But, you know, who knows? It may stay that way for a while. Hang Seng up 217. That's 1.3%. Back up over 17,000, 17,238. Still not so high. Shanghai only up 95 cents, though. They're still 28.91, below 2,900. They don't seem to be able to do much. Over in Europe, rallies here as well, but very muted. DAX up 27.2%. FTSE up 63. That one's pretty good. Up 0.8%. CAC's down 42.6%. I think the Paris Olympics are becoming... Paris is not doing so hot. Tourism is way down. I don't think the Olympics are all that well attended. Bonds down 4 basis points, 4.16. So rates are going down. Bund down 5 basis points, 2.35. Japan down 4 basis points, 1.02. Heading back towards 1%. Oil down 34 cents, 76.92. Brent down 38 cents, 80.75, and Greg was failed miserably trying to explain why with oil going down every day, my gas prices are up 25 cents on the week. Gold up 7.50, 23.88. Silver up 11 cents, 28.13. They were up more earlier, but not so much now. Foreign exchange. Yen is down to 153 after being 162 to the dollar, so dollar's weakened against the yen pretty precipitously in the last couple of weeks. Euro 108, kind of where it's been. British pound 128.3. Maybe the dollar is a little stronger against them as well over the last couple of weeks. Bitcoin on a roll, up $1,500, 69,732. As the sniff rumor is that the government's going to start amassing Bitcoin just in case. Like in case of what? On Friday, Dow up 654, S&P up 59, NASDAQ up 176. Big day on Friday. Looks like we're following up today. Greg, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Christopher Morel shaking everybody's hand in the dugout as he gets yanked in the game. How bad was that?
Yanked.
Yeah.
Morning, everyone. 7:39 here in Chicago. It is 73 degrees right now. We've got a thunderstorm coming today with a high of 80. Phoenix, it's mostly cloudy and very warm. High of 108 there today. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 32 minutes. Edens from Lake Cove, 47 minutes. The Eisenhower from Wolf, 24 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th, 15 minutes, and Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 22 minutes. MLB, Cubs beat the Royals, that was 7-3, and the Mariners beat the White Sox, and that was 6-3. And we have the Olympic medal tracker. The U.S. has 12 medals, China has 9 medals, and France has 8 medals. China has the most golds with 5, USA silver and bronze. They have 6 and 3 respectively. So all I got, Chief. Back to you.
So, John, when are we going to spring on Nancy our new idea for her?
You sitting down, Nancy?
Oh, yeah, I am. Mm-hmm. Wait, just waiting for it, guys.
It's going to be Nancy Inc., the first AI mortgage firm, and we're going to get you a C Corp, and we're going to IPO you like in September.
Sounds good to me, guys.
The first AI. So whenever anybody says, Nance, what do you do for a living? Mortgage AI.
Probably will just do fantastic with you guys behind me.
We're at it. And if everybody says, how does AI even relate to what you do? Just say, you would never even guess. I can't even go into it. It's so complicated.
Well, let's just have a virtual real estate market so the real estate is as real as a Monopoly board.
Okay? Yeah, why not? All AI.
There's money to be made. Yeah,
yeah, we can just play Monopoly on your phone and let AI know what you want to buy.
Okay. So, Nance, what is the state of the industry? I notice people buying and selling houses, but it all seems like they're winging cash back and forth. What's the state of the mortgage industry?
Well, they're all, you know, your A vanilla loans, they're just not out there like they used to be. So you just got people. We're still in the point where people are moving because they have to. You know, there's a divorce. There is health issues, like the seniors are, you know, having to sell. You know, just the same stuff we've had before. There's nothing really too new going on. I know Audrey feels that some people are, you know, are tired of waiting and they're gonna look for what they want and go, but it's the inventory is very low. Very low. So, you know, guys, it's the same old story. So the AI thing might work.
Well, Nance, what was as interest rates are coming down here, well, last couple of weeks they are, what was the tippy top on the mortgages? Did it make 7.5?
Oh yeah, you had almost eight, and that was like 3% down buying a condo and very poor credit.
Okay, so 7.5. I was going to say for real people, but 7.5 more of a realistic middle of the road.
Middle of the road was about 7.5.
So where would that have to go if these rates keep coming down here? Where would that have to go to where you'd say it's time to refinance? Is it a point and a half?
Oh my God, no. I mean, over 80% are, you know, around 3%. So it would have to come down, you know, 5.
Well, I'm saying if I was one of the people that bought the place at 7.5 8 months ago, where does that have to go before you call me up and say I can help you out?
Oh, I would say at least a minimum of a point.
So 6.25.
If there are 7.5, you start looking at it at 6.5. You know, maybe 6, but it depends. It depends how much money they put down, and then how big is their mortgage.
Okay, but if it got back down to 5.5, you'd be in business with those people. You'd be writing them all up, right?
In theory, yes. But if they had poor credit to start with, maybe not.
In other words,
you know what I mean? You wouldn't take them out of it because you don't know what they've done. And this is very sensitive for me right now because I just did a gentleman who, you know, you tell everybody don't take out any credit cards, don't buy anything. You are right against the wall of your 0.02 away from being over getting a mortgage. He took out a credit card the week we were going to close, so we had to put off closing for a week. And then he took out another one.
Well, did he cancel any, or he just took out new ones?
No, he just took out new ones. No. Said he didn't really think it would matter. I mean, you know,
after you told him
it would be a,
told him it would.
Correct. He said, well, you already pulled all the credit. I figured I was okay. And I'm like, no. So not only did he do it one time, he did it a second time. And the second card he borrowed $3,000 and paid 36%. No, he borrowed $1,000 and he was paying 36% interest on the $1,000 he borrowed.
Yikes.
Now, what could have been so important? He couldn't have waited 5 more days.
Hey, I have a question. I've managed to amass maybe one or two more credit cards than I wanted to. What happens if I just dump them? Does that affect my credit?
You have to close them, and then it can bring it down. But if you're in, you know, if the if you have good credit, whatever you do is not going to really matter all that much. It's if you have poor credit, if you're in the, you know, 600 range, it might.
Yeah.
But
the amount of credit available that's reduced by canceling a card can, if it's a big, you know, potential balance that carries, that could really pull your credit down, because all of a sudden you don't look as attractive to lenders.
So the big thing is you should never let your credit card, if your balance is, if they're giving you a $5,000 credit limit, you know, don't ever let it go over more than like about a third. Well, that's all. So if you only have one or two credit cards and you only had $1,000 limit, and then you go ahead and close them, well, then you're not showing that you know how to use credit.
Right.
So that's where it hurts. But other than that, I mean, it's never bad to pay off a credit card.
No, I mean, I have more than anybody needs to know. I went into the Bass Pro Shop down in Portage, and of course they're making a big spiel for giving you credit cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
So of course they have the very attractive young lady, and I know she's making money by getting one. So she talks me into signing up, and I got some really nice coffee, you know, traveler coffee mug and a hat and something else, a knife, all these tchotchkes, right? So I get back to Audrey's. I think Sarah took the knife, Audrey took the coffee cup, I got left with the hat. And I don't think I've ever used the card. I'm like, why do I even have this thing? I mean, I might have used it once that day.
See, if you close the card, that card, what difference is it going to make you weren't even using it?
Yeah, I'm saying I don't really want it in my wallet in case anybody steals my wallet someday. Anyway, I'm just asking.
And you're going to forget that you were there because the knife is gone and
yeah, I didn't even
coffee
get
coffee mug. Audrey's got it, and probably pretty soon the dog will eat the hat.
Yeah,
how are you going to remember you got the card?
Nancy, where do you think we are this summer compared to last summer as far as inventory or foot traffic, you know, people coming in to see you and you get a mortgage? Are you seeing things
I'm seeing people, yeah, I'm seeing more people coming in and talking. But they're also saying, what do you think is going to happen in the election? Maybe we should wait. There are still people who believe that, you know, their student loans are going to get forgiven at 100%. You have some people saying, you know, maybe I should we've been waiting 2 years and we're no better off than where we were 2 years ago. And the rents keep going up. And so those people really are ready to go. You know, I tell them, if you're probably really ready to go, you have to find yourself a home and then not worry, but make sure it's what you want, because you're mirroring the home, not the rate. In other words, the rate may go down and we can refinance you later, but if it's the home you want and you want to get started on your life, maybe this is the way to go rather than keep continuing paying the rent. So I do believe there's more, you know, John, you're seeing more progress being made and more discussions happening than what you did a year ago. That is for sure. That is for sure. But you're also seeing people talking about that they might get laid off.
Yeah, that's becoming an issue now, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear the number of people saying we are so slow where I work. You know, I think everybody's okay for now because it's the summer and it usually picks up in the fall. But they're saying if it doesn't, we'll all be like, oh, by Christmas.
Nancy, yeah, so they think so they'll be laid off traditionally, or they think the new thing is just cutting people's hours? You're talking about salaried people that are just flat out getting laid off. But hourly people, they just cut their hours, it seems, these days.
It almost seems, now, like this gentleman I was just talking about earlier, he says he works a full-time job, but his full-time job only is 30 hours a week. That's it. So,
well, it's a full-time in whose mind? I mean, it's not full-time in terms of they have to pay benefits or anything, is it?
No. I asked him that. That's why I was like, you have to be so careful here, because, you know, what the property he was buying was the right property for him. I agree with the whole transaction, but it's a shame. Like, it's just a shame how all of this went. He still did close because they thought of another way to do his loan, but And I had to pay off those credit cards. We had to get the credit cards paid off, the two he took off, took out immediately. I mean, there was, so, but you're only working 30 hours a week. And then you have to get a letter from the employer saying, okay, is this 30 hours a week a permanent 30 hours? Or
Nancy, it seems like an awful lot of work.
Description, yeah, the job description says it's between 20 and 30. Well, if he only gets 20, he doesn't qualify. You follow what I'm saying? Well, it's the oddest thing.
But how?
What's going?
How
going
on? It seems like you, obviously, talked to this guy at length. I don't know, John. Is it even fair for me to ask if they think it's going to be slow on a Thursday? Do they tell him to not come in, or does he at least have a schedule of some kind?
I would bet that, you know, if you're not working 40 hours, you're already pretty contingent from day to day.
Yeah, he works for the airline, so I'm not sure how this goes.
Well, Andrew does the Andrew's moving up in the world. He's going to management thing, which is nice. He works for those guys, Cane's, the chicken place. I've never been in there. All they have is chicken fingers and fries or something. They only have whatever. Evidently, they're doing pretty well. But anyway, I mean, he doesn't work. It says the average person there works 28 or 30 hours, but they kind of at least know in advance what it is. But like the Walmart, I haven't been in a long, long time. There's a Walmart down in Portage that's open at the time I'm up and wandering around on Sunday morning at 7 o'clock. And one of the people was telling me there, yeah, if the week is slow on a Wednesday, they'll tell you to not come in on a Thursday. She goes, how the hell am I going to pay my rent with that kind of crap? I mean, that to me would be devastating. I don't know. What do you do?
I don't know, but I'm starting to see more of that, which I have never seen in all the years I've been doing this.
I mean, what firms are doing that? I mean, how do you even? I don't know how you go down that road.
I do have somebody at Target. I did have the airline employees.
When you say airlines, you're not talking about stewardesses or flight attendants or mechanics, boy.
No, I'm talking about the ground crews.
Okay, so like the luggage people, they're not union. Yeah. I thought who's not unionized in the airline? I guess we'll start there. Who's not?
That I don't know, but cargo.
Really?
Freight.
Those guys? All right.
Freight is starting. I'm seeing it in freight in the truck, and I'm seeing it in the air traffic, things like that. So I'm seeing it in, people who do scanning for the hospitals, you know, like ultrasound techs, stuff like that.
Okay.
Stuff like that. They're just saying people just cancel, so you don't have to come in tomorrow. We don't really have that many booked. So it's kind of like industries where people make appointments and then all of a sudden they just don't. Because, you know, if you go into work and you're an ultrasound tech, you're getting paid per hour. You don't get paid per patient.
So they'll just tell you, okay, two people canceled this afternoon or they died or something. We don't need you this afternoon.
Right, and go home.
Oh God!
I think that's happening in the restaurant industry too. I mean, they look at what reservations they have or what kind of, you know, influx of people coming in on any given day, and they send people home if they can.
Right, but their income gets looked at differently because they have a commission with them. Most of these other people are just
how do you even do your job, Nancy? If this is so wobbly.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's very difficult. It takes a lot of time. I mean, it takes a lot of time to figure out, you know, the person in front of me, what are they saying? And then I have to call the company and find out how do they classify their employee? Like on this guy, it was, he can have anywhere from 20 to 30 hours per week. That's a big swing for a person who gets paid by the hour.
50%, yeah.
No, it was a third. Well, then he's third, guaranteed 20.
Well, third,
but then
third,
he could
okay.
get an extra 10. He could get an extra 10.
Oh, okay. So he's guaranteed the 20. It's not like you're supposed to get 30, but if we don't feel like it, we can cut you 10.
Right. But he really needs the 30 to qualify. So it's the 28.
He must have another job.
No, he doesn't, because they're consistently... Actually, they were when I figured it out, for the past 3 years, he's consistently been working about 34 hours a week.
Okay.
But how do you fight that when they've got this pre-printed thing they're handing you saying, well, it's only an 18 to 20 hour, I mean 20 to 30 hour position?
Well, I mean, I was Audrey and I were heading over Saturday night. We're talking about how all the not all the stuff, but a real lot of stuff you hear from, especially people on TV that have a really good job making a lot of money in our lifetime. You're much younger than Nance, but if somebody, quote, got a job, you sort of stop worrying about him or her. Because
correct.
Because even if it wasn't the world's best job, it meant they ate, they could afford some semblance of rent, and some kind of a jalopy, right? Now, the difference is that the people in poverty are working in a lot of cases. We had a listener last week. Of course, I got the comment from somebody where it's an entry level job, which is a little bit not so good. But somebody sent me a W-2 from somebody who worked at McDonald's in one of these states that maybe their minimum wage is only like $7.50 or something.
Yeah.
The guy or the lady, I forget who it was, worked a 40-hour week all year, and their W-2 was like $13.2. How the hell does anybody live on $13.2?
Well, we don't have to worry about that because now minimum wage is what, 15? Is it 14?
Well,
14
but not,
or 15?
And not in Alabama or Mississippi or wherever the hell this guy was. I don't know where the hell he lived.
Well, then their houses, but in,
yeah, you're right.
Actually, their houses are going to be a lot less expensive than like what we're used to seeing up here as well.
I got a question for the two real estate moguls, you guys, mavens. How exactly, I mean, there's going to be places. I mean, you and I, last time we were out together, you were saying how the idea that you can sell a place here at $400,000 and buy the same place in Indiana for, you know, $220,000, that ship has sailed, right? They've evened up somewhat dramatically. But my buddy who hangs out at the Tripoli Tap, and I see him a lot, he's a big remodeler, and I remember here, you know, owns property, you know, real nice guy. He was telling me years ago, he goes, Chief, just remember, if you're going to remodel $1 million house, the plasterboard costs the same as it does in an $80,000 house, so be careful. Be careful on the low end. You can never make any money. So my question is, these houses in Alabama and Mississippi that are, you know, $150,000, $120,000, what if you ever had to repair the place? You can't repair it for that. I mean, like I said, a plasterboard and a wood cost you the same amount. At some point, don't they have to matriculate up a little bit just because of replacement cost?
But this is what I think you're seeing in insurance rates. That of course, you can't, even a house that looks, you know, comparatively low in value is going to be prohibitively expensive to rebuild from the ground up. You have a tornado or a flood or something else. So I think insurance rates are showing just how difficult it is to, you know, ever get back what you had if it's destroyed or seriously damaged. I mean, you'd be paying in insurance, you know, a lot more over the life of your house than just the cost of getting that done. And you need the place done right away. I mean, there's all these time pressures with disasters like that. But I think, you know, it's a tough world for people who are living in a marginal home, because even sustaining that is going to, can, you know, possibly wipe them out.
Well, a water heater costs the same in a crummy house as in a nice house, right?
Yeah.
Nance, what we talked a lot, you haven't been here for a couple of weeks, we talked a lot about the incredible increase in some of the areas on the south and southwest sides, well, southeast too, actually, in the property taxes, where somebody's, you know, gone from $6,500 to $8,500, mm-hmm. Now whether they're going to, how has that affected what you do? I mean, if all of a sudden somebody walks in, they want to get a mortgage, and you go, hey, don't you realize that on the listing, it says taxes $6,000, they're really going to be $9,000, and oh, by the way, the insurance, which you thought was $800 a year, is now going to be $1,500. How's that? It has to affect what you're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
How do you anticipate?
I just had one this week where I think I said, how much do you think the taxes are in this house? And they said $12,000. And I said, yeah, I don't know. I said, I think you were misinformed. They said, what do you mean? I said, they're 24.
24? I hope it was a nice shack.
24. Twenty-four.
Nice place, I hope.
And the girl said, well, we're going to go look at it anyways. And I said, okay. And she called me yesterday and said, well, I wanted to let you know. She said, that is out of the question. Like, okay. So it's, you know, guys, this is just a myriad of different problems that go on all at once. And it just depends which one pops up, you know, rears its ugly head. But this tax thing is just absolutely amazing.
Well, what the, and we got a dash here in a second, but
it's going to knock more people out.
But we still have the Trump era 10,000 maximum what you can deduct, right?
That's correct.
But that was that. See, now that's John and I have talked about this, and we'll talk about it, you know, more next week. But all this stuff that supposedly is unintended, when you put inflation on the number, when Trump did that, it was what, 7 years ago, John, Nance, and everybody said, oh, it's only going to affect those bleeps in like you know, Connecticut and those kinds of places. Nobody cares about them. Well, now it's affecting people right here, right? Because we've inflated up to the point where the matter of fact, we were hauling wood. The guy upstairs and I, we went to get some stuff for a deck we're building. And he goes, oh, Chief, one of these days, maybe one of us will be making $1 million a year. And I go, Jeffrey, 10 years from now, we better be making $1 million a year. we're gonna be living under a bridge. The way, I mean,
that's what inflation does tell. Yeah. You know, the numbers that look generous today look pretty puny next year.
Yeah, well, we got to change our lead in. What if I had $1 million, what would I do? It should be like $10 million now or something.
Yeah, it's going to be different. I mean, there's, you saw some of the problems that you guys were talking about today. It seems like some things are getting better, but now other things are popping up their head. Well, doesn't matter what the interest rates are if you lose your job.
We got to go, but if Greg drops $1 million cash in front of me, I go to Audrey and Nance, they plunk me in a house. I go somewhere else and they plunk me in a nice new car. And oh, by the way, I go even get a small boat. I'm broke. I'm out of dough. Greg, I need a little more, buddy. You gotta feed the beak over here. Anyway.
Well, only when you start putting gas in the boat, then.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, you put gas in the boat. It's, well, at least if you have one on a trailer, you can use a gas station. I pay like $6 in the water or something. Anyway. Nance, thank you very much. Good to have you back. John, as usual, good stuff, buddy. Hopefully talk to you later in the week. SB Futures up 22.
Nance, okay, you up too. 30.
Back tomorrow.
John, we still got to get together.
Absolutely.
Okay. We'll leave Tom at home.
That's all, folks.